Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to The Soul Connection on Blog Talk Radio. It's spirituality simplified, conversations on conscious living, featuring your hosts, Bettina Goodwin and Eric Cerrone.
Well, hello, everybody. Hello, Bettina. How are you?
Hi, everyone. Hi, Eric. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing really excellent. Thank you for asking. I'm having a really great week. Nice. And I've had some free time, and we have baseball playoffs, and I coach high school baseball, and that's gotten started, and kids are having a great time. And it's always fun to, you know, when I first started coaching, I was like 21, and the kids were like, 16, 17, 18. And it was really great. Like, it was kind of like just being like a little bit of their big brother. But now that I'm like now in my mid-30s and I'm still hanging out with these kids, like, it's so much fun to still be connected to the life and the world of like teenage, you know, adolescent high school boys, and the stuff that they find funny and the things that they find frustrating and the things that they want to talk about but can't, or feel that they can't, and, you know, what social statuses and just the way that they interact. It's just, it's so great to have like a, you know, an inside track into what that time period was like. And it keeps me really fresh, because at that time in my life, it was like the point of like a real transition for me. And, I always just love hanging out with them and just being around that energy and seeing how much of a difference like decisions at that time in your life can really compound as you know, your first real decisions becoming an adult are like kind of right before you.
Yeah, I bet it's an eye opener sometimes, even though we've lived through that stage of our lives. It's interesting how quickly we can forget what it was like and what we were like. So it's a good reminder, and I'm just wondering if they call you Grandpa, though.
Well, you know, I still play quite a bit, and I'm still probably better than most of them. But if that wasn't the case, I'm sure that would come in sooner. So maybe I won't even expose myself to that once I can't throw the ball farther than they can.
Yeah, I'd stay on the safer side of that if I were you.
That's right. That you run the risk of being that guy who can't do it anymore.
Who
tells them how to do it better, even though you can't outperform them.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a big credibility gap at that point.
For sure.
You know, it's also neat to be a part of it because, you know, it also reminds me all the time. Like, I mean, you as well. I mean, like, we hang out sometimes and always surprised by my own age in a way, because I feel so excited about life, and, you know, I really embrace, you know, just coming with, you know, first when you realize the power of now, if you will, like the moment of now, you kind of get there, and most of the time you come to this stuff through like difficult times in your life. Like, usually it's not your life is sailing along beautifully and smoothly, and then you're like, hey, let me take up, you know, present moments and awareness, and let me take up meditation. It's usually you've come to it because there's a real frustration, or there's like, you know, I know I can't continue like this, or I know, you know, there's something that's really, really bothering me and I can't put my finger on it. And so you usually come to this work through pain. And so when you find the present moment, sometimes it's so amazing that like your problems just disappear. You realize that they're all in your head. You realize that you're not your thoughts. You realize you're the watcher. You realize that you can make all those things disappear just simply by focusing your attention on the now. But that's really only half of it. You know, the other half is once you realize that now is the only moment we have in contact with, you realize the unbelievable potential for the next second and the second after that, and that you're always like on the precipice of creating something, whether it be a feeling inside of you or whether it be a circumstance in your environment, that you can always choose anew to be and to represent, like, you know, the next best version of the grandest vision you ever had of yourself. And, you know, to be around kids, especially at that age, there's such a wonder. There's such a, I'm going to do this. You know, I'm going to go to this university. I'm going to, you know, do this next. I'm going to make this team next summer. And there's so much more of that excitement in that group about what they're about to create than I would say when I hang out with my peers. A lot of my peers are established. Whether or not they're happy or not doesn't even matter, but like their routine, they're, as we become adults and as we become like, have kids or marriage or careers, and then our everyday seems to look very similar, and those things that we can create that's like right at our fingertips aren't so much within our reach, at least in our own like cognition of them. And that's what I love being around that age group, because it I mean, I'm naturally like that. I don't want to lose that. But then it's so true, you are who you hang around with, and the more that you hang out intergenerationally, whether it's younger or older, it gives you tremendous perspective, and it allows you to like cherry pick the best perspectives of each generation.
Yeah, definitely. I it's really interesting because I absolutely adore kids, and sometimes people laugh at me because whenever I see kids, I want to talk to them, I want to watch them, and I just get so much joy from watching them. And I think it's that the thing that attracts me to them is that very thing, that they're so in the moment. They don't care what's going to happen tomorrow. They only care what's happening in this moment. And that joyful, childlike exuberance that they have for life and for everything that they do, including when they're feeling emotion. Whether it's good or bad emotion, there is an exuberance. There is a full in, all in, full on immersion into whatever's going on in the moment, whether it's excitement or sadness or frustration. They're in it full on. And I think a lot of times as, being a parent and as parents, we try to squelch that. And and then when we get to be 30 and 40 and 50, we wonder why we're pushing back on all these emotions and why we can't get to the emotions and allow them to move through us. It's because we've learned to squelch them. We've learned to push back against them and resist, and we become jaded in the process. So if I was given a choice, do you want to spend the day with these adults or do you want to spend the day with these kids? I would probably pick the kids, because I think I would have a more relaxed, more being in the moment, joyful experience just by virtue of how children face the world. So there you go. And it's interesting because it just reminded me of a story when the first time I went down to Maryland to meet Peter, and we went out for a ride on the motorcycle. And at that point, I was feeling the joy of meeting Peter and being with him and being on this motorcycle for the first time and really in the moment. And we stopped at a gas station for gas, and Peter went in to pay for the heat. Filled up the tank, went in to pay for the gas, and there was a little girl at the gas station with her father. And she came over and she started talking to me. And she started talking to me, and it was not too long into the conversation that I realized she didn't see any difference between herself and me. To her, there was no age. There was no age between us. Like, oh, this is a grown up and blah, 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 blah. I think she thought I was maybe a couple of years older, like a teenager, which was really funny to me because I was like 50 some odd at the time. But just the way she was talking to me, do you have brothers? And I said, yes, I do. And she said, how old are they? Because I said, do you have brothers? She said, yes. I said, how old are they? And she told me they were 8 and 12 or something. And she said, do you have brothers? I said, yes. And she asked me how old they are. At that moment, I thought, this is really funny.
Yeah.
Because, my brothers are in their 50s. But she never flinched. And she asked if Peter was my, did she ask if he was my dad or something like that? Yeah. So I could, there were so many little things that led me to believe that to her, there was no really no difference between her and I. Whereas as adults, we tend to see those differences. We tend to see the separation, the, you know, you're a child, I'm an adult, I should know better, you know, whatever those ideas we have about being an adult are, they do, you know, get set into place, and we do seem to follow along with them without question. And it's little experiences like that that remind me to go back to that place, to go back to that lovely innocence that we all still carry with us, but that we forget about. And I think children can teach us so much if we open up to that experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I love how you bring on like the full-on immersion, you know, because they're not worried about what's happening, you know, 15 minutes from now. Much, much, much less so than we are as adults in this great responsibility burden, you know, acting responsible and mature that, you know, while, of course, is important and useful, sometimes we take it way too far and we use it to make ourselves suffer and be miserable in our own experience of life. But the full-on immersion thing, I mean, it is just such a gift to live life from being fully immersed. Like, you know, reading books on flow, you know, there's this great book called Flow, and it talks about like the most enjoyable way to spend your time as a human being. And it's like, it's in this place where, you know, we've all been there where like just time like zips right by. Like it's like an hour and a half passes and you're like, oh my God, that was like 2 minutes. And you're like fully engaged in what you're doing. Usually it's something with a moderate amount of challenge. Usually it's something up your alley. Usually it's something that you feel proficient at. And to get into these spaces, and oftentimes, I mean, there's creative energy in there as well. And to get into these spaces where just days go by so fast because you're just having such a great time, it's those moments of full-on immersion that we can really take from the psyche of children and really apply to our own lives. And then not only in our own lives, how great that feels for us, but, you know, it's so attractive in another, you know, to be fully immersed, like when you play with somebody else, whether you're out having fun or watching a movie or going bowling or whatever it is you do with friends, you know, to lovemaking, to fully engaged in a great movie or an awesome concert, you know, or drugs or alcohol sometimes get us there as well. And sometimes we just use those things as a way to get there when we don't need to. But when you have an experience with somebody else where you're both just full-on engaged, I mean, it's just, it's the best stuff on earth. It's the best part of this experience, being trapped in this human meat suit.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing is, I think we get too caught up in being adults. And, you know, really, I don't see the benefit because I think that... No, it's true.
I agree.
It's like we have these ideas that being a responsible adult means that you must follow a certain set of rules and behave a certain way. And, oh, my gosh, like I remember when I was a kid that a woman at a certain age would never have long hair. And if she did, it would always be up quite neatly in some kind of a chignon or a bun or something. And now those kind of, you know, societal standards are being slowly dropped and dropped and dropped. And I think, you know, why do we have those standards anyway? Like by whose judgment is, you know, cutting your hair at 40 mean that you're, you know, that you must do that at the age of 40 as a woman is cut your hair because it's not mature to be, you know, wearing long hair or to wear jeans or whatever it is. Like those are all older standards, but there are still standards in place. I mean, there are standards for how men should behave. There are standards about how women should behave. There are standards by which men and women are treated. And, you know, there is a great struggle to drop some of those behaviors and some of those standards, and it is a struggle, and I don't always understand why it should be a struggle, because I think if we were to hold on to that lovely childlike sense of wonder and innocence and being in the moment, they wouldn't be issues in the first place.
Yeah. No, you're bang on about that. I mean, when I look around and I see the malcontent of so much malcontent. I mean, really, life is beautiful and we have every opportunity and every second to make it so. And there is a ton of beauty. But you know, we living in like the greatest time there's ever been to live, like with the amount of information at our fingertips, the lack of boundaries for education, the wealthiest time, the most peaceful of time, the most prosperous of times, you know, we live in a, you know, bustling suburban place in the world. And like, we've never physically, monetarily had it better. And our society, I saw a stat that said one in three women over the age of 35 are on antidepressants in North America. Like, you think about what that means. And that's not to say women, that's not to make a women or men thing. I'm sure men are not far behind. But what that really means for a society, for a place in the world where that's the case, where those parameters are the case, 300 million people, half of them women, half men. Like, think about what 50 million people just on antidepressants is a result of. And I think you hit a big part of it. I think one of the number one reasons is this expectation, this culture of expectation, this culture of standards. And it's all bullshit. It's ridiculous. And I mean, I'm really passionate about this because I saw this when I was in a teenager, and perhaps I was a little bit rebellious and a little bit of an idealist, but I could not fathom why everybody was following the rules so much. I'm now 36. I've never been married. I don't have any children. I have a very unusual income setup. I have an unusual living circumstances. I have my own place, but I have tenants. It's just whatever made sense to me, I did. And the only rule is that I have to make more money than I spend. And other than that, and follow the rule, the laws of the land, which really isn't that difficult to do, that's all I have to do. And then everything that isn't that, I get to choose. I get to choose in the direction of my happiness. I get to choose what I want to do and who I want to do it with and when I want to do it. And so much of the standards that I should have felt like I didn't complete my university education, all these things that I was supposed to do that everybody told me that I needed to do. And I'm not saying all my rebellion has turned out in roses, because there's certainly times where people gave me good advice and I just didn't take it, much like their bad advice. But finding your own way too, I mean, it just makes you feel really in charge. And that feels great because I got one life to be in charge of. I don't want control of anybody else's. This is enough for me. And I want to make my own decisions. But had I done any of those things, especially at the impressionable age of 18 to 26, whatever that was, had I not been so strong-minded about finding my own way, I wouldn't want to have been – I've had beautiful relationships in my life, like romantic relationships. I've had the honor and privilege to be part of some amazing – relationships and have some amazing high quality people in my life. But I look back and I wouldn't want to be married to any of them. And I wouldn't want to have fathered children with any of them, And it's just these things that I would have done had I not had such a strong-minded approach to things. And while certainly taking in information, I'm not trying to say that being bullheaded is, there's always a range where it serves and where it doesn't serve. But, I see so much malcontent, upset, frustration, give up mentality in so many of my peers that could just be remedied by sloughing off, all the things that they feel that they're expected to do. And if they just made more money than they spent, and then they can go on and choose in every new moment exactly what it is that they'd like to do, not only would your life be better, but if you do have children, what you show them and how you can show up for them better and your relationships in your marriages. I mean, right now they say every new marriage, it's 65% divorce rate for every new marriage that's happening right now. The average new marriage lasts 6 to 8 years. Just look at the stats. What are we doing?
Oh gosh, I can't answer that. What I would like to say about that is that it's not so much about the relationships as it is what we're looking for in those relationships and how we enter into those relationships. And I think it's fantastic that you have chosen to live a life that suits your means, that suits who you are. And I think everybody should have the benefit and the opportunity to choose the life that suits them the best. And as a parent, you know, I've hopefully been the kind of parent who allows my children to find their own way, to make their own decisions, to learn how to make responsible choices for themselves. And when they don't make responsible choices, what I consider to be responsible choices for themselves, they learn from the experience. They understand consequences, good and bad. But I do think that everybody should have the benefit of living the life that best suits who they are. That being said, it has to come, in order for happiness, contentment, peace, whatever that it is that you're searching for, that choice has to come from a place inside that is already content, already feeling peace, and already, like, a choice that's made from anything but peace is not going to be one that's going to keep you in a place of peace.
Right.
A choice that's made from anywhere but a place of contentment, if it's made from a place of desperation or need or lack, whatever it is that you're looking for, whether it's a career or a relationship or a new car or whatever it is, that is never going to fill that void that you feel if that's what you're trying to fill, if that's what you're trying to use to fill the void. The void needs to be felt and accepted, and you have to be able to sit in the midst of the void with a sense of peace and calm and knowing that all is well, no matter what. No matter what you're feeling, no matter what's going on in the world. And from that place, then, if you want to be in a relationship, it's going to be a good relationship. If you want to enter into a career, it's going to be something that you find fulfilling and that you love to do and that, you know, you go to work in the morning happy to go, and, you know, before you know it, it's 5 o'clock or whatever time and time to go home, because you are fully present and absorbed and all in that particular experience. It's not the experience that's going to bring you peace. It's peace that's going to bring you experiences that will keep nourishing that peace and reflecting that peace back to you in every single way. And so going into a relationship expecting certain things from the relationship is going to present problems somewhere down the road.
Yeah,
that's my explanation.
Yeah,
of it.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And like, whatever my story is, or your story, or anybody's, like, that's not necessarily right for anybody else. But I love that you break it down into, you know, why it is that we're doing these things, and sometimes we make these decisions before we have any clue as to any sort of mastery over ourselves and our own personal decision making, and, you know, yes. You know, all those things. You know, I was talking to one of the kids just on the bench the other day at baseball, and he wanted to be an accountant. He's, you know, doing his applications for university and stuff like this. And I was like, oh, like, why do you want to be an accountant? It's like, oh, well, you know, it's a really good job, and it's always in demand. And you know, that is true, that's not necessarily a terrible conclusion, but you know, that is going to take 6 years of post-secondary education, you know, at the very least, who knows by the time they get out. That's if they complete it. And then, you know, where is that decision coming from? That's the first thing you say. Is it because that you love it, or you love numbers, or you love organization, or you're the, you know, you've done a personality tests and, you know, you line up well with this and you enjoy the challenge of numbers and, you know, or you, you know, you want to find inefficiencies in the system or whatever, but it's more of a fear. It's more of a, well, I don't want to be poor. You know, I want to have a job that's steady and makes money, but you know, what happens if your personality is a prospector? What happens if you're somebody who likes many tasks, but you don't know this yet about yourself? You know, this kid's 17 years old, and they're choosing this career path and about to lay down $10,000 a year for schooling, you know, while not working and building up debt. And the real questions, the real examination of the questions, hasn't even been done. It's like, Maybe their uncle said, you know, their uncle that they respect says it's a good career. And so then you just get your mindset and it's like, hey, I'm pretty good at math, so let's do it. And, you know, of course they can change direction at any next moment. But once they feel comfortable with that decision, having not really examined it and where it comes from, you know, that can really set up a life. And then you see so many, like, you know, maybe you get into it and you're just not totally satisfied. Well, do you want to start over? No, because my main fear is I don't want to be poor. So you just keep, put your head down and you just keep doing it. And then this is the, how we compound these problems in life, whether it be with a career or relationship or any where we're living, you know, and doing, you know, we talk all the time on this show and we bring up so many different angles as far as ways to ask ourselves what it is that we truly want. And there's no right or wrong answer. You know, when you trust in yourself, you trust, you know, when you trust yourself, you trust in the divine energy that created you, you know, ask yourself. You know, don't worry about what everybody else is going to say or think or what you think you should do. Or, you know, if you don't want to be poor, there's a million ways not to be poor, especially today, especially where we live. And just too often we're like, hey, the accountant, being an accountant's the way to accomplish that. And then we just don't even look. We just put the blinders on and do what's right in front of us next without ever thinking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? My way of finding how not to be poor was to spend less money. So, I mean, it doesn't always mean get a better job, or it just means take a good hard look at what you're spending your money on, or, you know, what it is you're looking for. And then try to sit with that and be with that and find that within yourself, because it's there. It is there. Because if it wasn't there, then you wouldn't see glimpses of it. In the world, when you go out in the world, when you feel love for someone. If you didn't have love in you, you wouldn't feel it
right
when you're with someone else. So that to me says, where's it coming from? So that feeling of being poor, or, you know, abundance means so much more than just a dollar value or a bank account. Abundance is, you know, being in that state of realizing that everything you want and need is within your grasp, and all you have to do is sit in the stillness to really see that it's there. It's simple, and yet it's one of the hardest things you'll ever do.
Yes.
Because it's about moving all the crap out of the way to find it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an inside job, you know. It's not about, you know, because, yeah, well, you know, I know I've brought this up before on the show, but when I worked in real estate, I mean, there was people who were driving Beamers, were making $120,000 a year, and they had no money. You know, it's not just a one-sided equation, you know, it's both sides. And really, the feeling of abundance is an inside job, because over half the world makes less than $10 a day. And, you know, most of us here, to like just pay the bills, you got to make about $100. And it's like there's so many ways to break down the thoughts that we have, and then, like, by way of that, the feelings we have off of those thoughts, and then realizing the feelings aren't even true. We have control over those too. It's just so empowering, and it's just, you just feel in every moment like the creator. You know, you really do feel godly. You know, as much as that is adequately defined. Yeah. It's there's so many ways out of pain.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, there really is.
Well,
and anyway.
No, sorry.
One of the best ways is to go inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure there's people out there that are sick of hearing that, but you know what? It is really the only way. And you will travel your life and you will search and search many different ways in your life, and you will always come back to, it will always come back to that. It will always come back to going inside and finding what you're really looking for in the place where it originates.
Yeah. Well, here at minute 32, maybe we should start the meditation.
Gosh, where does the time go?
I know. Would you mind? Excellent.
No, I don't mind at all. Let's close our eyes and take a deep breath. And as you breathe, go deeply inside yourself to that place where you feel safe and protected, comfortable, loved, and at peace. And as you breathe into this place, feel your whole self immersed in that peace, in that safety, in that security, in that love, and see in just that breath how you can bring yourself back to the fullness and the abundance that is your birthright, that is a part of who you are, for which you have to look no further than within yourself to find. It doesn't mean that you have to give up all worldly things. It means that you give up the desperation, the need, the desire, the chasing after the worldly things. And you welcome them into your life from a place of abundance, of fullness, of contentment that already exists. And from that place, you can experience everything in your life in an absolutely different way. And from there, you see the difference. From there, you live your life differently. From there, you experience relationships in a different way. From there, you find your way in the world and choose a career that suits you. All there for you. The wisdom, the peace, the contentment, and the love. Remember to look at the source for all that you need. And when you're ready, wiggle your fingers and your toes and bring yourself back to the world.
Thank you, Bettina.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks, everybody, for being with us this week. I look forward to doing it for you next.
Have a great week, everyone.
Thank you for joining us today on The Soul Connection. Eric Cerrone is a spiritual thinker, listener, and coach. To find out more about Eric, you can go to intelligentoasis.com. Bettina Goodwin is the creator of The Wise Man's Way. The Wise Man's Way, heart-centered living for the modern urban man. For information on products and services, including workshops, group meetings, and one-on-one counseling, please go to thewisemansway.ca. And for more information on living an authentic life, to learn more about Bettina's offerings as a spiritual counselor and Reiki master, please visit thesoulconnection.ca. Thank you for tuning in to The Soul Connection.